For women in your 30s, it starts a lot earlier than you think. For women in their 40s, you have to get educated. You also want to be discerning. Who are you listening to? That is the reality, and it's not going to change in the next few years. It's going to take longer. For women in your 50s, it is not too late. You must do the same. You must get educated about it. You must find someone who has done extra training. You need to do it. And for people who are in their 60s, same thing. No, it's too late for me. No, it is not. You need to get into some good quality care.
Welcome to This is Perimenopause, the podcast where we delve into the transformative journey of perimenopause and beyond. I'm one of your hosts, Mikkel.
And I'm your other host, Michelle. And we know firsthand how confusing, overwhelming, and downright lonely this phase of life can be.
Join us as we share real-life stories and expert advice to help you navigate this journey and advocate for your best health.
We used to think menopause signaled an end, but really, it's just the beginning. Today, we're talking with Dr. Kirsten Smith, a trailblazer in women's health and hormones. With over a decade of experience, Kirsten's passion for empowering women shines through her innovative approach, blending the latest research with holistic practices. From debunking myths about hormone therapy to offering practical strategies for reclaiming your vitality, Dr. Smith is here to guide you on your journey to optimal health. Join us as we uncover the keys to thriving during midlife with Dr. Kirsten Smith. Welcome, Kirsten.
Thank you for having me.
We're so excited.
So excited to have you talk to us today and all of our listeners. Let's get started. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about who you are and your inspired mission to help women in perimenopause.
Sure. I am a naturopathic doctor from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I've been working in the area of women's health for about 15 years. Where I'm from in Canada, a naturopathic doctor is a primary care provider who's trained in regular medicine, but on top of that, we do 4 years of botanical medicine, biochemical nutrition, and all of the sort of, you know, exercise physiology, all of the components that are very well-established old modalities from the beginning of time, basically, but merging that with modern science, right? So in my scope of practice, dealing with women making the transition from perimenopause through to postmenopause, really, it's ideal because I'm looking at the HRT piece, but I'm also looking at all of the lifestyle pieces, right? So whether that's using botanical medicine, whether that's dealing with their nutrition, altering exercise, looking at stress physiology, all of that comes under the scope of practice of a naturopathic doctor from Canada. So I very rapidly began to see there was a huge need, like a huge, which remains to be the case now. I mean, it's just always been the case. There's a huge, huge need, as you know, and that my training really was amenable to sort of filling an important role. And so I began a long, long time ago, you know, 15 years ago, pursuing a lot of extra training whenever anything came up, on menopause care, perimenopause care, anything about HRT, because back then, it was sacrilegious to just even practically say the word. That was in the years where women were pulled off it. So that began a very interesting journey, obviously. But yes, that's that. That is what I do. And I, of course, I see women for all kinds of other health issues. But a huge part of my patient base and my everyday is people in perimenopause and postmenopause. And thankfully now there's a lot more of a high beam on that, which is great.
For the patients you see in perimenopause, what are the most common things you're seeing in terms of symptoms?
I'm so glad you asked, because it's really interesting, because nowadays, because there's a bit of a menopause moment, right? There's a bit more media, there's more, certainly a lot more on social, which is all, that's another question, another conversation, but mostly it's a very good thing, of course. And so there's sort of two sets of patients. There are people who have a strong sense that they're having hormone, you know, related or perimenopausal related changes going on, and they have a strong sense, you know, and usually their period has already changed, or they're having, you know, hot flashes, which these are very, I would, you know, this is low hanging fruit, meaning this is very obvious, right? They're having, you know, flooding periods. Actually, a lot of women having flooding periods don't even realize that that's a part of perimenopause. But generally speaking, people who are having erratic cycles and hot flashes, they know. So I get a lot of people like that. But what's hard to see is that they actually have no concept that they're in perimenopause. And that's because the earlier symptoms that I see all the time happening are insomnia, a rise in anxiety, some rage. And I mean, when I say rage, it's really its own independent issue. And some people that will just be extreme irritability. But for some people, it is unbelievable, like very destructive and very scary because it feels very out of their control. So rage and their cycles are like this, right? Clockwork. And they just have not connected because some of those changes don't just happen in the PMS zone, right? Like the few days before your period, they can happen all cycle long. So it's understandable that a lot of women don't connect it. They don't realize it. So for me, a lot of mental health, like anxiety, depression, there was a meta-analysis that came out a couple months ago by the University of Cambridge Press that examined mental health in the context of the perimenopausal window, which, you know, give or take is about 10 years. And I got weepy when I read it. I mean, I still get weepy thinking about it because it just verified what I see, which is, to answer your question, is an overwhelming amount of mental health issues crop up during this time. And that's because when you look at the data, any woman who has a previous history of any diagnosis, whether it's generalized anxiety disorder or whether it's psychosis or major depressive disorder or bipolar, for all those people who are in remission, the chances of it coming back during this time are very high, which is extremely frightening. And what's even more interesting about this paper, you know, this meta-analysis, is that it's evident that the regular medications that you would give for those disorders women don't respond in the same way. So you have a set of women who they have a resurgence of mental health and they're obviously terrified about that because, you know, I think let's also just call a spade a spade. Life in your 40s is aggressive, right? Like,
it's a great way to put it.
Some days I'm just like, if my parents are this happening and then, you know, my child and then the dog and then there's a flood and then
career.
I don't even know what's happening. Yeah. And I'm trying to like, you know, walk the talk and do all my self-care. Like, I don't know what the hell, but it's a lot of things are happening that we are supposed to be. So if you suddenly, you know, have a little friend visit you, which that you thought you'd put to bed, which was your historic event with mental health, it is terrifying, but also it gets obfuscated by the fact that your life is a little bananas when you're in your 40s. Right. So my point is nobody connects this. Women go in seeking help because women generally want to take care of business with their health. Men, that's a whole other, those people are crazy. That's a whole other thing. They have issues with even admitting that there's a thing. Women just want to get it done. So they go and then they're prescribed their medication and like, they're not having a great response. So that is a fiasco that's happening. And then for women who are the lucky people who don't have a history with any mental health, it can come and they can get really anxious and be like, what is this, you know, and really not coping with stress and really sad or just like really angry, but in ways that they absolutely know is not proportionate to what's happening. And that is early, right? And that stuff is special because, yeah, it might be really ugly the week before your period or a couple of days before, but it can be at any time. And that's very confusing if you're 42 and your cycle's completely regular, like you don't know what the hell's going on. So that I see a lot. And if I say the P word, like if I say perimenopause, people are like, oh, like they're just like
offended.
No, offended. They're just like, this lady, like, or she's just like, I've got a bias or something. I'm like, no, I'm actually pretty good at what I do. They just shut down because women have been subjected. It's, you know, certainly I won't speak for the whole planet, but in our culture, to just horrific ageism, right? So when people think perimenopause, they think like the year before you hit menopause. They don't understand. It's like it's a good decade of your life that can be rough, you know, if you're not getting help. I do, of course, see many of the other symptoms that you hear about that are really weird, like really, really dry eyes or really itchy skin or heart palpitations.
Weight gain, I'm going to throw that one out.
Oh my Lord, we could talk a long time about that. The weight gain is really obviously very distressing for people, both because they feel horrible and their self-esteem is affected, but also because they know it's a major health risk. And because, you know, they apply logic which is, you know, calorie restriction, some adjustments to their diet, maybe no more alcohol for a while, increase exercise, and not a lot happens. Which we can speak to that. That's an interesting combination of forces and a whole bunch of different hormones that are interacting that cause that problem. What is more significantly interesting to me is that women who are postmenopausal, it is not like that. No, you're not, okay, you're not going to have like the body that you had when you're 30, obviously, right? But you're not, it's not because you don't have the bouncing around insulin and the bouncing around cortisol, right? So your blood sugar hormones and your stress hormones are doing a lot of weird things, which causes this belly fat. And also in end-stage perimenopause for a few years, estrogen, you know, can be high, which causes some of this belly fat too. And so I could go on. There's a lot of things happening, which makes sense, which makes it very difficult, right, to lose. But it is easier to get leaner and stronger. There's a lot less drama and disorganization when you're just postmenopausal.
Bring it on then, please.
Sorry. It's a good news story.
Well, I can't wait. Actually, you know what? I thought I was getting really, really close. I was like 8 months into the countdown, and then it's back every month. And ugh.
You know, it's just the biggest burn.
It really is.
I just thought, oh, I'm not counting this. And then my menopause doctor was like, yeah, you know we are. I was like,
no. I was like, you know better.
I was like,
it didn't happen. It didn't happen.
Like, I'm writing it down. I was like, delete. It's not. You know, at the end of the day, that 1 year thing is, it's just because we have to put a stake in the sand somewhere, right? Like we just, because postmenopausal bleeding isn't normal.
Kirsten, I actually listened to a clip this week from Dr. Louise Newsom where she was saying that menopause is one of the few things that require a full year before you can get diagnosed with it.
It's an interesting thing though, right? Because, you know, a diagnosis, right? It's like menopause and perimenopause can cause a lot of destruction and a lot of collateral damage, but they are not a disease. What's more important than the semantics around all of it, right, is just that until very recently, there's been just no effort to educate physicians and other healthcare providers and women about the scope of it. It's multi-system. It's your whole body. It's not just your ovaries and your uterus and your breasts. Like it's an epic whole systems transformation that happens, you know, relatively speaking, kind of quickly. Obviously, as with everything in medicine, there's a continuum. And some people have perimenopause light and some people get eaten up by it.
We've highlighted a lot of the issues that women go through in perimenopause. And I understand you've got this really great new program out, the Peri Collective, and it's to support women through this transition. I'd love to know more about that.
In full honesty, out of just me day after day after day, just feeling a lot of anger, to be honest, and a lot of despair over what I was seeing, right? Which is that women were going through what was clearly perimenopause and going and advocating for care and not getting it, or getting misdiagnosed, or getting prescribed sleeping pills, antidepressants, weight loss medications, I mean, all kinds of different medications, because they were seeing their health slowly slip away. And, you know, what happens when you have gone through that, and it's very destabilizing because you don't feel like yourself, you haven't for a long time. One of the, you know, very classic symptoms is insomnia. So obviously, if we're not sleeping, everything crumbles. And then you go and you have the courage to go and push for solutions and answers, and you're getting exactly nowhere, dismissed, or prescribed medications you know have a bad risk-benefit ratio. And also, they're not even helping.
Yeah.
And then you come and you, and there are others, of course, there are many people like me, but you get with somebody who's trained and you recover. It's very emotional for people. There's a lot of upset, right? Because they sometimes have lost years of their life to being a complete mess and have developed other health issues as a result. So it really starts to wear on you, you know, after years and years. And I've been asked to make the program by people and recommended. So finally, like, it was hard to do, right? Because I had to create it on top of my day job, which is seeing patients, which is hard. And I have a little kid, but I slowly wrote it. And then I slowly found the right people to help me produce it. And you know, the feedback has been really good. And what I wanted, my vision, my hope for what it is that people can transform and get a hold of their health and take charge of it. You know, and I wanted that because I get requests from all around the world pretty frequently. And so I wanted, whether you're in Dubai or you're in Denmark or you're in England, I wanted for women to be able to get it sorted out, get appropriate care, understand what labs they need and what labs they don't, understand what is the research on exercise, you know, for us during this time? What is the research on nutrition? What does matter? Because there's so much, you know, the space is also heavily polluted by people who are, you know, not really experts, but they're really good at marketing. I'd say net for net, there's mostly positive out there, but still it's just very overwhelming for people. So for me, what is required, even for my patients, right, is not just me chucking recommendations at them, is people don't do well with that. I learned that there has to be some education. They have to understand the ways in which their metabolism has changed, the ways in which their stress physiology has changed, so that they understand that when I'm advising them to do XYZ, I really mean it. You know, it's not just about going and taking HRT. It's just not. There's a few other things that you need to understand and learn about. But every module that I have, you know, there's a summary at the end that's like, you got to do this, this, this. And so far, so good. I mean, the feedback has been excellent.
What are some of the modules?
There's one on metabolism, the metabolic changes. There's one on exercise physiology, stress physiology, which supplements and vitamins actually matter. There's a module on labs. What do you actually need? What is a lot of hype in marketing? What is the research looking at? What are you going to get the best traction with if you're advocating for yourself? What do you need to ask for? So there's one on labs. Then there's, of course, there's a big beast on HRT. At the end, there's a module on advocacy and learning how to really just get it done. Like, you understand now what's going on. You understand that there's solutions and that they're attainable, but there are pieces of it where you are probably relying on a healthcare provider. So how do you speak to them? And then there's also a module just on the psycho-spiritual component, which for me is like, I actually get butterflies when I think about it and when I wrote it and reread it and when I deliver it, because there's all the details about the problem, you know, the challenge, it's hard. That was not a vibe that I wanted to be, you know, rolling out. Like, I want it to be solutions oriented, and I wanted to give a module, a chunk of time to what is the bigger story, you know, in terms of our development as a person. And in terms of, you know, radical acceptance over time around aging and learning to like really put a lens on gratitude, I really do see quite a metamorphosis happening with most people that is ultimately super empowering. There's a whole thing that happens to people where they have a reconnaissance with themselves and are like, wow, like if I'm going to be okay and if I'm going to be happy, it's on. I need to put into me. And, you know, I say that from experience because I take care of people for a living. I do a lot for my family members. I solo parent and chose to. So I'm like the poster child for really having to learn to take care of myself during this crazy intense experience. The perimenopause part is the messy, dramatic part. The postmenopause part, yeah, there's things like I'm writing that course now. You got to do a unit on cardio. You got it. Bone health, vaginal, pelvic floor health. You got to all that. It's not like it's your ticket to like the free ride. No, but it's not as complicated and it's not as up and down. It's just not. And women tend to have arrived emotionally in a much stronger place, which is really fun to see.
That's amazing. That sounds incredible. And I feel like all of us on this call right now are like, oh yeah, I need some of that. The tips and tricks that you're sharing at the end of each chapter you need to, or at the end of each module you need to, is it things like immediately my head jumps to like learn to sleep better or prioritize sleep, or is it things like that, or is it different for every woman? Is it different for every module? Are there any common threads that you could advise our listeners? Like if you're suffering right now and can't get into the program tomorrow, here's what you could start doing today.
Sure. These biochemical changes happen to all of us, right? So because there's a lot of hormonal pivots and adjustments that are happening even beyond your sex hormones, right? One of them is cortisol, which is a stress hormone. It has also, it's a critical circadian rhythm hormone. You know, it comes up in the morning and then slowly throughout the day it goes down, and at night it has to go low so you can go to sleep. So some examples that are simple would be with cortisol, you want to have, like you said, all the sleep hygiene. So a completely black room, a cold room, no digital, no screens for a good hour and a half, 2 hours before bed. All of this has research, right? And, you know, getting up in the morning and sitting in the window, even if you're in the wintertime and the sky is gray, just if your retina sees the sky, it tells your brain, okay, let's go. We got to make cortisol. But the other thing is exercising and going back to the belly fat. A really useful thing to understand is that during this time, in perimenopause, it does not help you to do intense cardio, which a lot of people, I might add, are frantically doing because they have belly fat and they're like, what the hell?
Well, and that's what we learned in our 20s, right?
That's our era, right? Is like, we actually do, yeah, you're right. We do come from kind of a cardio focused, I'm going to fly away on the spinning bike, you know, I'm going to go, well, I mean, that is what we come from. But here's the little nugget that is helpful to know. Which is that cardio, if you're going much above your sort of moderate intensity, mm-hmm. will stimulate cortisol to come high. Why do we care? Because that causes sugar cravings. It harasses insulin, your blood sugar hormone. It causes weight gain. And that is already a problem because of other things that are happening. So the last thing you want to be doing is exercising in a way that's contributing to the problem. So what you need to be doing per the research, and there's an excellent scientist who's dedicated her career to researching exercise physiology in perimenopausal and menopausal women. Her name is Dr. Stacy Sims, and she's phenomenal because she's given a lot of time to this area. And we deserve that because we got unique things happening. But what helps you is to not do, you know, super intensive cardio and to lift weights. It doesn't mean you can't go on a walk. It doesn't mean that you can't do Pilates or yoga. Of course you can, but you don't want to be, you know, running an hour four times a week because you're just going to have problems that don't make sense with your weight and with your sleep and with your energy because cortisol is doing weird things. Why the weights? Weights because estrogen is declining in a very erratic way, but net for net on each month, you're making less and less as you approach menopause. And estrogen has three or four mechanisms for stimulating growth factors and growth hormones and therefore muscle. And so one of the things that affects your ability to manage your metabolism is muscle loss, which starts to rapidly happen at about 40. So lifting weights to make sure you're not losing muscle, but even maybe to build a little bit, means that you're burning more. Your basal metabolic rate is spinning a little higher. Well, that helps you when you're in this fat storm from hell in your 40s, right? So just these are the types of things that I teach what's happening, and then there's sort of an executive summary of like, what are the things you therefore want to do now that you understand? What does the science say? Like, I'm interested in the intersection between what I see, because I've been doing this a long time before it was cool, you know? And so sometimes I report on science to people, but I'm like, I don't really see this. I don't see this clinically yet. I think we'd all like to think that really high quality trials, you just see it and it translates into real people. But clinically, things sometimes are not perfect.
Well, and to be fair, we don't have enough trials. We don't have enough research. We're barely scratching the surface, right?
We have so little in terms of science, and it's a hard thing to hear, you know, how deprioritized mm-hmm. it has been. It's difficult for all of us. I mean, I honestly think about this in terms of my heart and the ethics of how to sell the program, because I really want to I really would like it to get all over the place to help people because I think it really will. But it's like, I don't want to be making people feel sad. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, we got to be honest. And the honesty is important because it's a huge change that requires, like, it's a different playbook. If you're honest about it and you help people and they cross to the other side, then there is a lot of power in that.
I was going to say the same thing, Kirsten. There's a huge amount of power in that. And the understanding that there are things that you can do about this and there are things within your control. And I think probably most importantly, something that we've never really understood is that we have a choice and we should have a choice about our healthcare and how we want to take care of our bodies. And we just haven't been given that opportunity. And so what you're doing is, instead of saying, well, you need to exercise more, you need to do this, you're explaining what's going on, what the science says, and here are your choices. And I don't think there's a human alive that would walk away from that feeling sad.
Well, I mean, they came away from it feeling actual massive relief, to your point, because they understand what's happening to themselves and they understand the options for actual real solutions. Like, this will work, this medium, absolutely. It's more just that when we're talking about it, it can be sort of sad, right? Because a lot of the, as you guys know, a lot of what's out there on social is, it's kind of sad or it's kind of scary. It's like, we have been forsaken. There's no research. There's misogyny in medicine, which there is, of course. I just don't want people to give up or feel like it's too much or feel like they can't, because they can. They can.
I think they'll get riled up. And frankly, that's what we need, because the only way we're going to affect change and make it so that the system is doing what it should be doing for us is if each of us demands better. And you can't demand better until you know. So I say riled up, not sad.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I think it makes me feel better, because I think you either have to kind of take on getting educated or you're going to pay quite dearly. That's the reality. Yeah. What's hard for people, especially in the Canadian space, is that, you know, we come from this beautiful public healthcare space where, you know, we're used to just taking direction and having an incredible amount of faith in that. And it's been really hard for people to kind of come face to face with the fact that they actually know about perimenopause a lot more than their doctor. Like, that's very alarming for people. And that's the reality. And you know, I think that will change, but it's going to take, for a whole generation of people, they're going to be swallowed up and spat out by the time that change happens, because it really has to happen in medical school.
Right. Well, it's already happened. There's already been 2 decades where women weren't receiving potentially the care that they needed.
Yeah. And that's another huge demographic for me, is every week I have a few people who are in their 60s who are getting hit with all this information.
How angry would you be, right? If you've been suffering for 20 years and suddenly now people are talking about it, I think I'd be fierce.
Fucking mad.
Fucking mad.
I also think, I know this sounds dramatic, but it's kind of horrifying. Like, I think we understand about feminism or about misogyny in so many industries, but it's really gross to think about it in medicine. So yeah, there's a lot of upset about that, to say the least, to think that they could have had much better bone protection. Listen, you know, at the end of the day, heart disease by quite a margin is the number one thing in Canada that kills women way more than cancer. And we are not on the books yet as saying for sure, 100%, because we don't have enough freaking studies, but it reduces cardiovascular risk. But it sure looks like it on my end, who's doing it all day with patients and looking at labs and looking at how their bodies change and looking at what happens to their bodies if they pull themselves off HRT because somebody scared them. Like, it sure looks, I'd put my money there. But the truth is, at this point, we don't have enough science to just fully say that. Bone health, as you guys know, we're allowed to go on the books and say, with great certainty, it reduces risk a lot, you know, a fracture, which is the second thing that kills women. Mm-hmm. Women don't, they're like, what do you mean? And that's because you could just be standing chopping a freaking cucumber and just your hip snaps. That's osteoporosis. It's not necessarily that you freaking rolled down the stairs. Heart disease is silent. Bone loss is silent. And the education that we get is just piss poor. It's not a priority. The big thing that is 3 times more common in women is dementia. And that is also, we know there's Dr. Lisa Moscone, who's doing a lot of important research looking at estrogen's relationship to dementia. We are, again, not on the books as saying that HRT or estrogen officially reduces the risk of dementia, but it's looking awfully like it might one day. My point is, an entire generation or two of women, as you just said, were yanked off because of the Women Health Study Initiative. And that, you know, a lot of women received almost nothing for surgical menopause. You know, they had to get a radical hysterectomy, uterus and ovaries out at 40, and they're given like, oh, you can only have this for 2 years. That's insane. You know, for to leave somebody with no hormones at 45, like, so the reality is there's a huge wave of people like me seeing women who are older seeking answers, seeking clarity. Can they start it now? And again, the conversation is difficult because we just don't have enough research, but the research looks like it is a risk if you restart or you never on it and you start if you're over 60 or more than 10 years postmenopausal. Because there's not awesome research, it puts people like me in an awkward position because I'm like, well, this is what the studies really are showing. And here is the position statement from the Menopause Society. This is what they say. When we're talking about a stroke, we would like a concrete yes or no. And what's interesting is if we perceive that they are having a list of symptoms that really could be, because Pete, you can very much still have symptoms in your 70s from not having estrogen. That is a reality. That shocks people. It's not just this 5-year heinous party that you're having. It is more acute in the years following menopause.
Can we also just add in the vaginal symptoms? Those for sure don't get better, and that's also totally ignored.
We could do a whole thing on the genital urinary syndrome of menopause because that also sends me into outer space. Like I really rage about that because I've had so many patients who get misdiagnosed and I don't even understand how. Oh, I have the best gynecologist in Toronto. I'm like, do you? Gynecologists are heavily focused on disease, tumors and problems and cancers and fibroids. And they got a lot going on, but like, have they had any training in menopause care?
No.
I don't think so, because like I'm the one diagnosing stuff and I'm not even in their junk. I'm trained to do all that, but I don't. I work remotely these days. So, I mean, I'm constantly like, no, when you have females who aren't even sexually active and they're getting chronic urinary tract infections, it's a huge red flag. That gets misdiagnosed all the time. And the repercussions are serious because they are on cycles of antibiotics and then they have a massive yeast problem. Also, the other thing that gets misdiagnosed is a little bit of special times with incontinence, right? So you sneeze and you pee your pants. Like, I mean, I don't know if anyone has been on a trampoline lately, but that's
not for years.
I am like making weird faces because I'm clenching so badly so I don't pee my pants on the trampoline with my son. Like, there's a huge role for pelvic physio, but like, there's no amount of Kegels, sister. Like, the whole pelvic floor is littered with estrogen receptors. If your tissue is changing and you're not in front of it, it's not just painful sex. It's a disease, you know, that's coming at you that you have to manage. So I get very mad about that. This isn't just about pelvic floor physio, and it's not just about hammering someone with a repeat for antibiotics. Yeah, the genital urinary syndrome of menopause is a collection of really, really shitty symptoms. And it can start young. And that is very poorly understood in women and in doctors, whether they're nurse practitioners, nurses, GPs, gynies. So people need to know about that.
If someone's listening to this thinking, oh my God, that's me, what should they do?
So what you would do is go to your GP. You could go to a gynecologist if you have a gynecologist, but you can go to your nurse practitioner or your doctor. And you can advocate to do a trial to just get a few months of vaginal estrogen, which is a prescription in Canada. And vaginal estrogen is safe for everybody. In fact, in many parts of the world, it's over the counter because it's so safe. So you would advocate for that because there is no risk, right? And you will know pretty quickly if you're getting frequent infections or pain or stress incontinence or, you know, you will notice that you start to feel better very, very quickly. Everyone should be offered it. I would like to iterate that this doesn't mean that you're 2 years away from hitting menopause because you need vaginal estrogen supporting your 40. No, it just means for you in your body, you're at that threshold where, you know, some weeks the output that you're making is just dipping for you.
And I think too, maybe we could just add, this gets back to the problem with healthcare and how we're served, that the FDA is insistent on vaginal estrogen having the same black box warning as systemic estrogen, even though it doesn't have the same risk profile.
I just can't wait. There's so many things. I just can't wait because I have to have these conversations over and over again, and it's insane. So it's not just with vaginal estrogen that they have dated pamphlets, okay? It's every single human identical, bioidentical estradiol products. So systemic estrogen, all of the, you know, there's a bunch of Health Canada approved or in the US FDA approved estrogen products that have warnings on them that are like 25 years old, you know, from the Women's Health Study Initiative that terrorized people, right? And vaginal estrogen, to your point, gets the same pamphlet basically. And it's very upsetting that they have these stupid dated pamphlets that terrorize people.
Kirsten, before we go, I think that your Peri Collective is an invaluable resource. And I would love every woman to be able to connect with you on this. So can you let us know, like, how do they find out about the program? Can anyone join? When is the next session starting? Tell us everything.
Yes, thank you so much. It would bring me a lot of joy to get it out there. So the next round where I will be live on Wednesday evenings, and it starts April 24th. Of 2024. It's 5 Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's available to anyone around the world, but it is at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesdays starting April 24th. Each night, it's about 2 hours because I am, you know, presenting for an hour and 20, and then I leave a lot of time for Q&A because I have learned that that has been of great value and really fun as well. So, and then at the end, everyone gets to choose to jump into a private Facebook group, which is where all the alumni who have taken the course. And I'm going to start to pop in there live every couple of weeks to give people access to me. But the way that you can find it is through my Instagram or through my website, of course, or through Facebook. Peri Collective also, after this next round this spring, we're going to be recording it so that people can buy it and do it self-paced.
Oh, I love that.
So I'm going to have the option of being with me, which will cost a bit more because obviously I'm there and there's the Q&A. And then for people who want to do it at their own pace, they can buy the course with all the recordings, minus the Q&A, obviously, for privacy reasons for the people who are asking questions. So they can buy the whole course and do it, you know, like any of those courses, do it at your own pace.
Oh, that's great. I love that option. Kirsten, what is the one thing you would want every woman in their 30s, 40s, 50s to know about perimenopause?
For women in your 30s, it starts a lot earlier than you think. For women in their 40s, you have to get educated. You cannot rely on the care that you're getting. You have to read a book, take a little program, listen to, you know, some doctors. You also want to be discerning. Who are you listening to? Is it a fitness trainer? Is it a dietitian? Is it a doctor? Is it a naturopathic doctor? Please be discerning.
And are they selling products?
Yeah. I'm also going to be selling my program, right? But so selling is a part of life. But to your point, like if you're buying a program from someone who's just selling tons of herbs and is not a trained herbalist, like I just think the internet is full of sort of pseudo experts in any discipline, in anything, right? And so you just have to be like, who are you getting your information from? And what are you spending your money on? And you know, understanding that we can rage about it all we want, and I do rage about it, but you have to take it on to get educated about how this works and what your options are and what the research says. And then you have to be prepared to, you know, kick a bit of ass. You got to be prepared to advocate for yourself, and you have to be comfortable with it. That is the reality, and it's not going to change in the next few years. It's going to take longer. For women in your 50s, it is not too late. You must do the same. You must get educated about it. You must find a menopause, perimenopause, literate naturopathic doctor or medical doctor or gynecologist or nurse practitioner. You must find someone who has done extra training. It is not too late. There's all kinds of things that are very, very important that you can do to reduce risk, and you need to do it. You need to do it. And for people who are in their 60s, same thing. No, it's too late for me. No, it is not. You need to get into some good quality care.
I love it. Thank you, Kirsten.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please take a moment to rate and subscribe to our podcast. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so more women can find us and get a little better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
We also read all the reviews, the good, the bad, and the ugly, to help us continuously improve our show. We would love to hear from you. You can connect with us through the podcast, on social media, or through our website. Our information, as well as links and details from our conversation today, can be found in the show notes.
This podcast is for general information only. It's designed to educate, inspire, and support you on your personal journey through perimenopause. The information and opinions on this podcast are not intended to be a substitution for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. The information on this podcast does not replace professional healthcare advice. The use of the information discussed is at the sole discretion of the listener. If you are suffering from symptoms or have questions, please consult a qualified healthcare practitioner.